Did you ever want to design, build, and program your own working Game Boy? I sure did. Maybe like me, you're also lacking the necessary soldering, airbrushing, and programming skills, or simply don't have the time or the space for a fully-fledged electronics workshop. Then you'll have a blast with retro gadgets. I can best describe it as a virtual workbench that enables you to create your own gadgets and share them with others via Steam's workshop. While doing so, you can also learn a thing or two when it comes to programming. Dear listeners, today I'm here with three developers from Team Evil Licorice, and 5 days before the release of their upcoming game Retro Gadgets, they took the time to talk to us today, which I find incredible. Since we are so close to the release of your early access in Steam, the most important question that comes to my mind is how much sleep are you getting at the moment?
I'm sleeping well.
Are you?
Me too. I mean, we're really trying hard to do not make too much overtime or lunch if we can. Of course, some times happen, but we try to do not.
Sounds like you already have a lot of experience in game making, but we'll come to that later.
Yes.
Maybe for our listeners, would you mind to introduce yourself?
Sure, I'll start. So my name is Marco Bancale. I'm the Licorice side. So my company is called Licorice, and it's based in Iceland. And my last game was Kingdom, so maybe some listeners recognize the game, a 2D side-scroller from a few years ago. And I've been working on another game called Plasma for 5 years, which is also almost done. But then 2 years ago, I got this idea for Retro Gadgets, and that's how the collaboration started.
Cool. I'm Luca from Studio Evil. I'm here with my partner, the other Marco, my partner in business. And I started with Marco and another partner in business, which is called Christian Studio Evil, back in year 2011. So it's nearly 12 years, and always made video games in my room or at my home and at night before being a professional, let's say, game developer with Studio Evil. We published a few titles before, a little less well-known than Kingdom, which was a great success. We published Supercane Magic Zero, which is an action RPG, a very whimsical and cartoonish action RPG, and Cider Arcade, a shoot-em-up, old-school shoot-em-up. This was back in 2012, more or less.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the other Marco. My name is Marco Di Timoteo. I'm, of course, a partner with Luca. I'm one of the three founding members, as Luca told, of Studio Evil. I'm more of an art and design guy, but in small teams like ours, we tend to do a little bit of everything. Of course, they tend not to let me code, and this is a smart move because I kind of suck. But anyways, the thing is, we do a little bit of everything, everyone has. So yeah, I work with Luca on every project that we made in Studio Evil. I have Blender artists, which comes up a lot of the times when I talk about 3D art, because, you know, Blender artists, we're that way. And I also do some pixel art, apparently, because most of the art in Retro Gadget was done from Giuseppe Longo, which is another Italian pixel artist we work with. But then at some point, we decided we wanted something a little bit more advanced with the pixel art, and so we added all normal maps on top of normal pips of the, let's say, standard pixel art that we have. And so I came in and did all the upgrade overhaul. So on top of Giuseppe's beautiful drawings, I did all the normals and all the technical stuff that make Retro Gadget look a little bit different than other pixel art games. That's what I did basically on the last project.
While we are already at the topic, Retro Gadgets, I would describe it like a virtual workbench. I already had the chance to try it out because you were kind enough to provide me a preview. It's really nice to see how you manage to simplify processes like printing a PCB, so a printed circuit board design, soldering, which I suck at, and airbrushing, an example. And you really make it look like a fun game. And below the surface, there's also so much more, as I learned when I tried the game. It was really amazing to see the level of detail you can go into. And maybe just to give our listeners a small impression, could one of you describe just briefly the steps that are necessary to build a gadget in your game?
Basically, the game is, as you told, it's some kind of, it's not exact simulator, but you start with an empty workbench, and you can start to drag on your workbench those board pieces. So those are small pieces which will compose your gadget. You can solder board pieces together to shape it the way you want. And then, well, having an idea, you can start to drag components on your boards, like LED lights, or displays, or knobs, sliders, everything we have. And after just giving some kind of first shape to your gadget and having some components on, you can drag a CPU or maybe a video chip or audio chip. Drag the multi-tool, which is some kind of device you use to program your gadgets, and start to code your gadget, because it's a game basically about, it's more about coding gadgets than building them. So you can start to program the way they work. So like if I just move this slider, then ramp up the lights or something like this. And you can basically start with very, very simple things like pressing a button and lighting up an LED. And you can get to really complex thing, because we do have components to like connect to internet services. So you can just have, we can make a small chat thing. You can make a small video game inside RetroGadgets. You can make a video game inside a video game in some way. It's the way, basically the way, if I can give you an example, the way Pico 8 or other fantasy console works. Just like a RetroGadget, but in RetroGadget you can build your console. You can build your gadget. You're not only emulating something, but you can actually build it. And then, as you told, you can grab your airbrush and spray paint your gadget, or we have a pixel art editor inside, so you can draw your own pixel art inside the game and use it in the game, or print a sticker with the pixel art and stick the sticker on top of your gadget if you want. So that's a basic overview now how the process works. And when you've finished your gadget, you can maybe publish it on the Steam Workshop, and everyone can download it, open it, and reverse engineer and learn from your gadget. So that's the circle of the game, the basic idea.
Great summary. Thank you very much. Especially the aspect that you can build your own gadgets is kind of a hook also for people who are not programmers. When you have this process of really creating your gadget at first, so really thinking about, okay, how I'm going to design it, what is it about? Should it be a Game Boy? Should it be a Walkman? Should it be a keyboard? And then when you have this done and you go to this programming site where you really have to physically select the CPU or the audio chip and then connect it via code, this is what really makes it fun, for me at least. So it's a really nice hook that you are also able not only to have this process of coding, but also have the process of building something first and then bringing it to life with code. And I think you guys managed a real cool thing there by putting those things together. Is there some inspiration, some games or some other tools that you took as inspiration for Retro Gadgets?
I think the two games that inspire me the most, I mean, there are also other things that are not games, but let's start with those. One is Shenzhen IO by Electronics. It's a game where you have to build electronic circuits and then code them in assembly, which is crazy for a game, but it works so well. And the other game is Papers, Please, which, you know, apparently has nothing to do with electronics and everything. But what I always loved about Papers, Please is the diegetic interface. So everything, you know, you have to open the passports, you have to read, you can move things around on your desk. And I wanted to get that feeling again. And basically when I pitched the game to Luca and Marco, I immediately said, okay, we have a rule here. Rule number one, which became rule number one, is that the interface must be 100% diegetic always. We can never violate this rule. And we, you know, this created a lot of problems in terms of game design and UX, but that's the fun actually, is to find interesting solutions. And we haven't violated, so it's still like that, and I think it works pretty well. But anyway, about inspiration, what inspired me was also, of course, Pico 8, and just the idea of having this fantasy console you can code with interesting constraints, and from the real world, Arduino and hobby electronics, which I love. And so I wanted to create something where I could kind of do what I do with the Arduino, but without having to know actual, you know, electronics or being an engineer. So I don't have to worry about, you know, resistors and things like that. I just track things and they kind of work. So that's the main inspiration.
You really gamified this whole process of what we have to do, because soldering itself can be, you need to develop a skill, you need to practice it to be good, and it's not like you're going to create something working right away. And with your game, you managed to simplify this process, and it really again sparked the interest in me to start picking up the soldering iron in real life again to build something.
Okay. That's cool. It's a bit of a cheat, you know. We made a game to cheat life.
Yeah, we're gamers, so cheating is part of the games. Why the retro theme? You could have gone full high-tech or sci-fi or something. Why did you choose retro?
I think I'm speaking for everyone, hopefully, but I think it's just because we are old. we are from, you know, we were born in the 70s, grew up in the 80s with, you know, the first personal computers and the Amiga and the Spectrum and the Commodore 64. And yeah, that's where the nostalgia is, basically.
I was born 85. I heard once after you're 30, we're all the same age. So,
yeah.
What I really love about your game, when you boot it up, the startup sound. I was instantly reminded of my first Game Boy. When you pick it up and have this.
Yeah, that startup sound, that is a history. It's like, how much time did it take to get a sound that we liked forever?
This was a session with me and Michele, who is our sound designer. And he was, you know, coming up with a lot of cool ideas. And I was like, no, this is not right. This is not right. And I was really a pain for Michele. But then, you know, we managed to find the right thing. I think it's good enough. Not everybody liked it in the team, I can say. Christian wasn't really.
Yeah, Chris had his chance to make the sound. And it
exactly. Exactly. I asked him so many times, he didn't do it, so now he has to accept it.
Exactly. That's a punishment.
But I love it. For me, instantly, when I booted it up, I had a strong throwback to my first Game Boy, as mentioned.
Okay, nice.
Which does not mean that your colleague is never again to make any work and let others do it.
No, we really hope Chris is going to get his hands on the game when we upgrade the audio part, because Christian is the other founder of Studio Evil, so one of the two components of Evil Crisis. Chris is also our CTO, so technical lead, but he's also a musician. So like for our first game, Feather Arcade, which I don't know if somebody remembers it because it's not like a popular game and it's a little bit old now, it was 2012. But anyways, one of the things that people appreciated was the music, because it was inspired from all the music from the golden age of the Amiga. So like Chris Hultbeck, like the great musicians of the Amiga time. And Chris is really good. So I really hope he gets to make something for retro really soon.
Yeah, I suppose chiptune music, something like this, on this alley.
Yeah, chiptune, but also kind of synth. And he also is, I think he can contribute in the sound editing tools that we're now missing. So that's something that is really an exciting part that we don't have at the moment. And hopefully we can build up during the early access, you know.
One more thing I'd like to talk about regarding the game with you guys is when I came to this coding part, as mentioned before, I'm not a programmer, have a little experience with Lua. The game also developed kind of a meta aspect for me, because immediately what I did, like you do today, you go to YouTube, check for tutorials, and I already noticed that Luca, especially you, made some really nice tutorials about how to program your first little gadgets, which were really helpful in a kind of way that at first you have this, okay, monkey see, monkey do. So I looked what you made and tried to recreate it, but it was really fun. And I also felt that I really learned something, at least about the logic behind the coding. I understood a little better what the logic behind your tools is. So the tutorials that you guys are making, is this also an aspect where we can look forward to seeing more? Is this also part of your development strategy?
You have to know, one of our secondary goal in designing this game, so our secondary design goal was like teaching how to code. So we really want people, because we're biased a little bit, me and Marco from Licorice, both of us, we are programmers. So we maybe are a little bit biased, but we want people to get the fun of learning how to code. So part of the game will be also just growing up this knowledge base about coding, starting from simple thing and then getting better, better and better. Because we still, RetroGadgets offers one thing that usual teaching programs about coding doesn't offer, which is it could be very instantly fun. You get some kind of instant reward because you're just programming something physical without or taking out all the complexity of, as you said, soldering things or doing, but you're creating something physical and even pressing a button and seeing a LED light which lights up is super satisfying. And it's like two lines of code. So I want to just move people into the fun of coding and being creative over a few lines of code. But that's the idea behind, and we will grow this part.
RetroGadgets, like Marco was saying before, it's a lot. It's a game about coding. I mean, not only, but a lot about it. There's a lot of, if you code in RetroGadgets, it's going to be much more fun. So we need to find ways, and the tutorials you mentioned are one of the ways, to remove any difficulty, any things that could be scary to new people approaching this game and maybe coding itself. So we have work on both these tutorials and other things that we are thinking about, like maybe some sort of in-game tutorial. We have not decided yet how they might work, but things like that. Because we really want, as Luca was telling you, to share this amazement of your first line of code running, doing something with the... So yeah, so this is where we want to go, definitely.
So a modern Hello World, basically.
Yes.
You have 5 days until you can share your creation with open, wide Steam world. How are your feelings before that?
Excited. I think we released other games before. And I mean, Marco Kingdom was a great success, okay? But especially, I don't know if Luca, you feel the same, but for us, we made games. We were proud of these games, okay? Cider and Super Cane, we were proud of them. But this one, I feel retro is a little bit special. So, because it's weirder, it's uncompromised, I think we have something very interesting. I don't know if it's going to be a success, but I think this is very, very interesting. So I'm excited about the release. I mean, we have 5 days and we're basically only testing now. Okay, so the build has been released internally this morning. We have a lot of new stuff. We have a small but very, very tight community in our gay Discord, basically. And some of these guys are testing, are making stuff. And so we're seeing that the game is stable also because we participated in the Steam Next Fest 1 month ago, I think. And so we had the game like under pressure already with a lot of people using it. Amazingly, it didn't break apart. So yeah.
But still, you're going to release the game in early access. What's the reasoning behind this?
The perfect game to be released in early access because it's a game about the community, and we need feedback from the players, especially in terms of what's the next step, what kind of components they want, where to direct this, how to navigate this this product. And we have ideas, of course. We have all the features we want to implement, but it's great to have this community and just listen to them, basically.
Yeah, it already gave us a lot of interesting ideas. And especially the onboarding part, I think that's where community feedback is going to give us a lot of things to think about, and maybe find interesting and new solutions for this game. I think that's also a part where we are going to learn a lot.
Understood. Also, you're releasing it. I think the core, the stage of the game that I was able to play is already very solid. So, looking at the few creations that are already online, you mentioned that you will also be able to share your creations via Steam Workshop. The creations that you see over there, like Simon Says games or even small consoles that were already built, where you have to run away from wolves or make a little guy go somewhere and pick something up and go back and come back while controlling it via keyboard. It's really amazing. And I think when the game is released to even a wider public, I'm really looking forward to see what the guys are going to create, guys and girls.
Yeah, me too. Especially now we have a couple of features that basically no one outside of the studio has tried, like the HTTP chip. So we basically have a chip that allows you to do like HTTP calls, okay? And I think this is, people can potentially do a lot of things outside Retro Gadget. We are Retro Gadget. And I think the more we connect retro with the outside world, so internet connections, on a webcam, maybe later we can do other things. I think this is going to make this little game even more relevant because people can actually do gadget that are not just gadgets, but they are interesting tools. Also, because Marco, Luca, do you want to say? Because I always tell the like our end game at some point, you know, when we speak. But do you guys want to speak about it or?
Sure.
You can. I can. I mean, the idea is that we want. Retro Gadget is a game, but we want it also to be a tool for making things. I mean, something that you can use to make real things, like if you're playing with Arduino or things like this, you want to make your small kitchen timer, you know, that's the first project you do, and it's real and it's really useful. We want the game to be even a tool to make real things. Now you can create your gadget and hit F11 and have your gadget on your desktop, on your Windows desktop. So you can use your computer and use your gadget together, okay? And
like Winamp.
Yeah, exactly. And the idea is to let people compile gadgets into .exe file. So just get out from the game, their gadget, and make their creation and distribute their creation as they want. So the idea is to transform this game also into a tool to make things. Could you imagine you're making your small Tamagotchi-like thing you want to have as a companion on your desktop, or maybe there's a guy who made some kind of currency rate exchange in Retro Gadgets. It's just converting your currency into other currencies or small tools which could be useful and pixel art and beautiful to see and retro style.
It's our killer feature.
Deserves the name of killer feature if you go this far to really have standalone executables that you can compile and share.
Yeah, forget about Unity, Unreal. Retro gadgets now. Which is a little bit meta because it's made in Unity.
Do you remember in Windows, they also had these widgets that you could put on your desktop that they removed?
Yeah, exactly.
When I watched the tutorial, I think, Luca, you made the tutorial, you created a small webcam, or basically you hooked a webcam up in Retro Gadgets and switched from your live stream where you were recording the tutorial to your Retro Gadgets webcam. That really blew my mind. It was really cool to see it.
Yeah, and there's a lot of potential. As you can imagine, we still miss a very solid audio part, okay? But the idea is that when you can finish to build up the audio part and you can make your own gadget, which is some kind of music synthesizer you want to use, and then you can compile it and use it as an instrument for your composing software, because it interacts with your system, it outputs some kind of audio stream, and maybe you can use it inside your way. I mean, you can make music, you can make a small concert with it, you can do, that's the goal. So letting you do cool things and use your cool things into your real life.
Where we created our opening jingle for our podcast, we did it with a HTML application that is called Beepbox.
Exactly.
Version 2 will be done with Retro Gadgets then.
Okay. I hope so.
That's a deal.
Maybe we can also publish this podcast episode via Retro Gadgets.
Oh, that would be cool.
You already have a lot of experience in game development and in the gaming market. So would you mind sharing a few stories with our listeners? And I would ask each one of you just to give a short overview, and maybe to make it easier for our listeners, just say what's your name and which studio you're from. When did you start making your own games?
This is Marco Bancale from Licorice. Okay, I started making games when I was 12 on the Sinclair ZX Spectrum. So it was a long time ago. I immediately got hooked into programming, and I just wanted to recreate, you know, the graphics effect that I was seeing in games. So I started learning assembly. I don't even know. I was crazy at the time. I mean, thinking like, you know, I was 13, 14, just learning assembly on the Spectrum. But anyway, yes, yeah, so did that for a bit, then moved to the Amiga a bit, and then PC, the first, 8086 or 286. And there I really started learning graphics programming, and in general, I learned C, C++, and I was always making games in my free time, of course. I was going to school. Then I went to the university in Bologna. That's where actually I met Luca. And there I was, sure, learning the boring stuff that you learn at university, but at the same time, I was always into game development or in the demo scene. That's how actually the reason we met. We were always talking about demos and demo scenes and all those crazy years. Then we made two companies together, me and Luca and other people, that had nothing to do with games, because at the time, and we are talking about the late 90s, early 2000, it was basically impossible in Italy to open a game company. Nobody would give you the money or anything. There was no market. So we're always, you know, let's do something else to make money. But then in the free time, let's make games. So we're always making games. And then in 2003, I moved to Iceland. I worked in other companies that had nothing to do with games. But that finally in, I think, 2010, I joined a game company here that doesn't exist anymore. It was called Gogogic. We were making iPhone games. So we published a few games, but there it was the first time I entered the real game industry, and it was a lot of fun. It was a bit of a shock in terms of cultures and like the dynamics, because it's basically a place where you have these two worlds that hit each other. Like, you have the artistic world, and then you have the technical world. You have the programmers, and you have the artists. And it's super interesting to see like how this works, and sometimes it doesn't work. So I had a lot of fun in those years, learned a lot. Then I became a freelancer. I worked for a few companies in games here and there, and then I started making Kingdom with Thomas Vandenberg from the Netherlands, and we published in 2015 under Raw Fury. And yeah, that went super well. So a bit of luck, a lot of luck, and a bit of skills, let's put it that way. And then, yeah, basically went so well that I found myself in a, let's say, privileged position where I could start, you know, making other games without having to think too much about the financial side of things. And I started working on a big game called Plasma with the author of Polybridge, Patrick Corrieri. And we met at GDC, the Game Developer Conference, in 2016, I think. And we became friends, and then we pitched each other our next game, and it was basically the same game. So we said, okay, let's do it together. And it's been going for 5 years. So that's my full-time job. So it's Plasma. But then 2 years ago, as I mentioned, I got the idea for Petro Gadgets, and I really wanted to do it, but I didn't have time. So I said, hey, Luca, how about, you know, we make a game together, like after, you know, almost 20 years of nothing. And we're like, yeah, of course. And I pitched it, and they loved it. So So they are mainly doing retro gadgets. I came up with the idea. I helped with the design, some design decisions, but the team is amazing. They've been doing incredible job. Actually, I'm flying to Bologna just for the release.
Oh, great.
Yeah, we're having a party.
Yeah, cool.
But yeah, that's where we are. That's about me.
Yeah, Marco, thank you very much.
Okay, Luca from Studio Evil. Marco, probably I shared the first part of the story with Marco and the last part. So I basically started as Marco did, but then Commodore 64, so it was better. I started like at 10 years. There was 10 years old, 11 years old, and I had this Commodore 64 at home, and no one near me knows how to program this game. So I just opened up the manual, the basic manual, and actually it was in English. I couldn't speak English, so I was just trying to translate and code, and then it started to. When I played the first video game on Commodore 64, I thought, okay, I want to make something like this. I want to do this. And that's because I found the way for me for being creative. I'm a very technical guy in some way, so I'm not an artist, and I always try to find my way to be creative, and I found it in programming. And Commodore 64 and video games gave me the sweet spot for being creative. And then I learned programming and then I switched to Amiga, and I had an Amiga for a lot of years, and while learning, I started to get into the demo scene, and that's why I met Marco, more or less. And just the fun part, it's super retro, so I want to tell you, I met Marco because back in those times I had a BBS, a bulletin board system, on my computer. Like, I was taking off my parents' phone at night and plugging in my computer, and people was connecting to my computer because it was like, you know, you were calling a landline. So they were connecting to my BBS, and I was the CISO. I was chatting with people sometimes. So I started to chat with this guy, which were downloading demos from my BBS, and we started to talk about demo scene and computers and programming. And then I asked him, okay, where are you from? Where you're based? And I found out it was like 100 meters from my parents' apartment. So we just get in the streets and they met each other, basically. And that's how everything started, basically.
Great.
So we can say that Retro Gadgets is here, because I was taking off my parents' landline and plugging in my BBS like 30 years ago. That is the start of everything. And then, as Marco told you, we worked together a little bit and then went to Iceland. I continued running my company here, which was a communication / marketing / web business. And after more than 10 years of running this company, I told my partners in business, okay, I'm sorry, but I don't want to do it anymore. I want to make video games. It was like 2010, 2011. And then I decided to start a new company, and I found out people near me who I had met in the past who were interested in video game business and skilled. And the most skilled people I met in my past were Marco from Studio Evil here, and Christian, my other partner in business. So I called them and I told, okay, I want to make video games. I want to make a company who's making video games. Are you in? And they joined. So Studio Evil was founded, and we made games, and we're also making a lot of business-to-business contractor work in VR. So you're doing a lot of VR stuff and making games, and that's, I mean, how the story goes. That's why I'm here.
So I'm the last one, and Marco, the other Marco, so Marco Di Timoteo from Studio Evil. And my story, it's a little bit of an in-between, because and in between for a different path. So I wanted to draw stuff. I had this Commodore, actually the first computer I played with was a VIC 20 that my father brought home. But I started actually trying to understand how to make games on the 64, trying to code the first games. Back then you could buy magazines and the games, they were not even, later they were on a cassette or a disc. But the first magazine, they was the basic code written in the magazine. You had to copy it into your computer to make it run. So I started there, but it was something, maybe I was too young, I don't know, because I was less than 10 years old. Maybe it was not for me. But I also always wanted to make games. And then came the Amiga in my home. And with the software called Deluxe Paint, I started drawing sprites. I didn't know they were called sprites back then. I knew nothing. I started drawing things and animating things with Deluxe Paint because I wanted to make games. And then I would pester all my friends at school. Hey, we have to make a game. You know how to code? And no one knew how to code because I was from like a countryside town. I mean, actually very close to Bologna, but fuck it, no one knew how to code there. So anyways, fast forward a few years, I tried to become a comic book artist, but was not really my thing. So I used computer to make pixel art, but it took until my 20-ish year of age of me trying but not connecting with anybody operational to make games, where I met Christian, the other founder of Studio Evil, at a town fair. What happened was basically I had a small company that made websites similar to Luca back then. Then we organized a small space in this town fair where people could come and play Quake 3 Arena. Okay, so we had this like ongoing LAN party there, and one evening we hired a whole space to Christian and another bunch of guys from Bologna here, and they were a LAN party like nerds like us. So we started to play together, but then we spoke to each other, and it turns out these guys were making a mod for Half-Life, for the first Half-Life. That mod was called Holy Wars. So I don't know if you, it's not one of the most popular mods, so it's no Counter-Strike or Team Fortress back then, because before Valve actually bought the mods, these titles, these were mods made by the community back then. So before that, we were making this mod called Holy Wars, and it was pretty popular back then. So they were, but they didn't have an artist, a 2D artist. So they asked me to start making textures for them, and I started there. And then another guy called Antonio, which chose a different career path later, he taught me the first things about 3D art. And this is how I started. And fast forward 10 years of me, a Christian, trying to create a game company at night that with mixed results, we ended up with the request from Luca of making an actual company. We knew Luca from different paths before, we crossed a path before, but never actually like professionally. But when the stars were aligned in 2010, when Luca came to us, say, hey, let's make this. And then we found the Studio Evil, and then the story is aligned with Luca. So this is how I started. This is what I do, what I did to be part of this story. Yeah.
Great that you guys came together to build something this cool as retro gadgets. Good that the landline was not taken back then.
Yes.
So maybe for our younger listeners who don't remember the dark ages, you had to make a choice between taking a phone call and connecting your computer to the World Wide Web, or before it was World Wide Web, to the bulletin boards.
Now I feel really old.
Yeah, and don't worry about it.
The good old days.
But these days are not that bad as well.
No.
Now you're going to feel even older if I ask this question. Do you have any advice for indie devs that start out today, since you already have this much experience? Do this, don't do this.
Things change so fast in this industry. Nothing is valid anymore from our, you know, our past in a way. Like I would say if it was like 10 years ago, I would tell people if they want to be programmers in the game industry, I would say, you have to learn at least C, the low level language, C, C++, maybe a bit of assembly, otherwise you don't understand anything of what's happening in the computer and all these things. But now I've changed my mind a bit on this, and maybe it's not that important anymore. I mean, it's important too that you are a good coder and understand how things work. But it's okay if you skip, just all those steps and go right into C#, Unity, or Unreal, or whatever you want. So I don't know. I'm just talking out loud, but I don't know. No, I'm not gonna give any advice.
Well,
A good advice, especially for people who's really starting now, doesn't have any a big experience of making video games, is just choose something very simple and possibly unique. You need just you maybe need only one very unique and distinctive feature, and try to craft this feature to perfection. You don't need to make big things. You don't need to make huge
MMO,
small next MMO or something like this. Just a small, tiny jewel with a unique feature, with something which is really unique and distinguishes you from all the other games around. Because the real problem for everyone, probably even of course for us, which are not huge game developers, but even for people bigger than us, is that there are hundreds of games reaching the market every single day. And doesn't matter if you're the perfect kind of game, you have to stand out in some way. You need to have something which is very unique and perfect, and this will help you to stand out a little bit. Then you need skills, of course, you need luck, you need a lot of things, but it's very, very difficult to get to the market and show your game to people if you're trying to make the perfect soccer game, because we have a lot of soccer games, or the perfect or in a row puzzle, because it's full of puzzles. There's something unique. That's probably the smart in small, because it takes a lot of time to make a game. It takes so much time.
Actually, sorry, I have an advice after, and I'll let Marco talk. I just can. It's very simple. Learn English. First thing.
Yeah.
For everyone, learn English. You cannot make games if you stay in your own little, bubble of your country. That's not going to happen.
Very valuable advice, yeah.
Well, the other advice is meet people. Talk to people.
Yeah, that was I want to say. Find a good team. Find good people to work with you. Game dev, it's most of the time a team effort. And even if you think you're making this game alone, you're going to have to talk to people. So you're going to have like connection in the industry. So maybe it's not your team, you work in the same game together, but have connections, speak to people, be good with these people, because this industry can be really harsh. So don't be an asshole. And if people behave in a way that is toxic to you, whatever it is in a company, think about it. Very good. Crunch sucks. People that will try to exploit you because there is some situation where a lot of money are involved. So find good people and work on yourself to be good yourself. So in a team, don't let your ego talk all the time. Just listen to the others, especially we are very passionate. Most of game devs are extremely passionate about this job that we do. And it makes sense. It's wonderful. It's interesting. There's a lot of stuff that you have to learn to be a dev. So you have your ideas. It's fine. It's great. It's what makes you good. And also, if you choose to work with others, when you work with others, listen to them. Even if you don't agree, fucking listen to them all the time. It's super important. You're going to grow so much when you start listening. So that is especially a lot of young people with tons of talent and tons of energy. They come, but they are really, they want to get there. Or maybe they think they know everything. Work as a team. That's what was my advice.
It applies to so many factors in life. I read somewhere that we're going to hit a new record in 10,000 games that are published in Steam in 1 year. When you think back about 20 years, I was happy that I had 5 Super Nintendo cartridges for the year or what.
Yes.
Now you have 10,000 games, and of course the tools have gotten a lot better. The level of handholding that you get, even as a newbie there, from the technical point of view, is amazing. And I think these soft skills that you guys described, these are the really valuable things. Today we are in a unique situation because, Marco, you are currently in Iceland, and Marco and Luca, you two are in Italy. And typically what we like to do in our podcast is also to get a little better understanding about the gaming industry in each country. So what is the market and how is the gaming industry like in your respective countries?
Iceland is unique in many ways. It's very small. And as Luca loves to say, which is three people. It's not three people, but it's 300,000 people, which is
less than the population of Bologna, basically.
Yes, exactly. But despite that, there's a huge game scene, and then the game industry here is pretty big compared to the population. It's a country that is very attracted by new technology. It's always been, you know, at the edge of progress and all kind of things. So they love, you know, when there's a new thing, I'm gonna, you know, buy it, or I'm gonna work on this. I need to understand how this works. It's very interesting. So there's a big, and for maybe the most famous company, game company in Iceland, the CCP, which makes EVE Online. It was founded in 2003, I think, or no, 2001, maybe. Not sure, but a long time ago, and I visited it actually the first time I came here for vacation. I went there. It was very interesting, and you know, it's a big company, 400 people making EVE, and sometimes other things don't work out very well. But this basically created, after, you know, you fast forward 20 years, now you have a lot of expertise, right? You have a lot of skilled programmers, artists. So this facilitated the growth of the rest of the game industry here. So there are a lot of people who quit CCP and founded their own companies. And there have been many from like super indie, small, like two people, three people, to medium sized, like 20, 30, 40 people. And currently there's three medium sized people companies. One is called Solid Cloud, one is called Mainframe, and the other one is called Directive Games. And I think they're from 30 to 70 people. So it's a thriving game industry for sure here, and a lot of small indie companies as well. I'm in a space here where I can, you know, rent my office, and most of the offices are taken by game developers. So it's very active. There's a lot of also just the scene, you know. There's it's called Game Makers Iceland, which is like a association for game developers and or anyone, and they create a lot of events. So we meet up very often. You can showcase your games. We do game jams. So it's very, very interesting.
Is there also some kind of governmental support?
Interestingly, no. Or as well, like, I mean, up to like maybe 2-3 years ago, there was no support from the government. Now there's like a fund that you can apply for. But there's been a lot of collaboration between CCP and one of the universities here where I used to teach game design for a few years, and they basically sponsor a lot of the courses, and that helped a lot, you know, to make the industry grow.
Oh, nice, especially your collaboration with universities.
Yeah,
the talent has to come from somewhere, and
yeah,
hopefully,
yeah,
this will increase. Yeah, thank you very much for this insight in Iceland. How about Italy, you guys?
The downside is that we didn't had in the past, or I mean, like in Iceland, very big companies or big investments here in Italy on the video game market. So we do have the largest company probably in Italy is Milestone, which is in Milan, and they make only racing games. And they are probably around 200, 300 people now, but it's 300 people over 65 million people. So it's not like Iceland. It's different. It's very few people, and all other studios are small or medium studios. If you, I'm not counting Ubisoft Milan as an Italian studio, but they are growing. They're super good, and they're growing now a lot in the last years after Mario Raving Rabbids.
Yeah, but the head is not in Italy. I mean, the creatives are here, but
yeah,
Ubisoft is a French company.
So we don't have that much people with experience coming, maybe from a big company, a very successful company. We do have a lot of creativity. I do think we do have a lot of talents in all the sides, in creativity side, on the programming side. We do have a lot of talents, but they are not coming from the industry. They're just trying to get into the industry in some way. So it's a trial and error. I mean, it's like being probably 10 years late respect to Iceland in some way. There are a lot of small, very small companies, small to medium-sized companies like Studio Evo, or Studio Evo is 14 people now.
Because artists that were not that small.
Yeah, actually, we're not that small for them. And they're growing, they're making interesting titles, but we are struggling in getting money to make video games, because traditional investments in Italy are on, I mean, construction, building, or traditional industry. So it's just growing steadily, but slow, very steadily. And but still, it's changing. I can tell when we started in year 2011, there were very few companies, and we couldn't see really a way where to just get out from the situation. And now there are new studios coming every year. We have university programs about video games, for instance, trying to teach people how to, I mean, the basics of a video game making, because, you know, you can be a programmer, but being a video game programmer is different from being a programmer. It's just like if you are a 3D artist, and being a video game 3D artist is different from being it's not better or worse, it's just different. And it's specialized, it's very a different set of skills. I mean, there's an overlap, of course, but it's a different set of skills. So we're just growing, and I feel it's not bad. I mean, growing in a slow and steady way, it's not bad. We don't need to explode. We just have to grow a solid business and skills and things. Last 2 years, 3 years, we have seen government investing in video games. So they started to open some video games fund and some rules about taxation in the video game market. So, I mean, I hope this will start to attract a little bit more investments from outside. And Europe is investing a lot in, European Union is investing a lot into culture and into video games. So, and we can, of course, apply from Italy for Creative Europe funds or things like this. So I feel we're on a good path.
And the companies that are active in game development now, I think they're solid companies. It's less volatile in Italy, but that makes us a lot less explosive, like most of the things that we do here, to be honest. It's solid, it's just very slow.
I also share your impression, and I heard this from a few people that we already talked to. While back, we had Andrea Leoni from Bit9 Studios. He's also from Italy.
Yeah, we know Andrea.
He basically said the same thing. It's getting better. It's not there where it should be, but at least there's a positive trend.
Yeah.
And hope we continue on this so that we one day all can be like Iceland.
Oh, hopefully. But a little bit more sun than Iceland. This.
I mean, they have pizzas over there. I don't get why we don't get to make games over here.
That's a good point.
You guys, to sum it up, Retro Gadgets will release soon on Steam via Early Access. I can really recommend it. Definitely check out Retro Gadgets when it releases on the 30th of November on Steam. Thank you guys so much for being here. Do you have a little sneak peek of what our listeners can look forward to in terms of features that are going to come?
So we have a lot of stuff that is very technical, but I'm going to tell you anyway. So we managed to add... This is a programmer thing, but before the last internal update, we didn't have the possibility to include other like code files into one. So the classic, you know, import a library, import something, require, in Lua is called require, the other Luca, we have another Luca, the main programmer, which deserves a lot of praise for this game, Luca Sadmin, he did an amazing job in this game. We were about to release without this include other program or the libraries feature. But then the other evening, Luca comes up, say, "Hey, I did it. We have the includes." And we were like, what? For non-programmers, this is a big deal, because otherwise you would have to have all the code in one file. So it makes really difficult to make complex things, and also maybe to pass code between users, because you can, that way you can orderly write all your your functions or your libraries of utilities in one file and then pass it to other people as a text file. So this is really, really, really cool, even if it's very, very technical. But anyways, RetroGadget, it's like a technical game.
That's a huge feature.
Yeah, that's a big deal. That's a big deal. And this is like, we have not announced it yet. So this is the first time we tell it publicly.
You heard it here first, depending on how fast I can cut this podcast. Let's see who will be faster. Yeah, you guys, I don't want to take too much of your time. Thank you again for being here. We will stay in touch and good luck with the launch.
It's been fun. It's been really fun.
Thank you.
Take care. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.